I'm Dave Iles, the author of Look Up and Look Out. I have been to the Grand Canyon several times, most recently with my son Chris and some other guys who hiked two-thirds of the way down to the Tonto Trail and then across from the...
it was a plateau, right?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a plateau and a trail.
There you go.
It's a trail on a plateau. Yeah.
There you go.
That's okay.
Hi, I'm Brad Bloom, publisher of Shout Outdoor Lifestyle magazine. You know, few places can capture the imagination with grandeur, free the human spirit, and speak of God's timeless presence like the Grand Canyon. With over 1,002,000 acres covering nearly 2,000 square miles, this dramatic landscape is home to hundreds of species of birds, mammals, reptiles, amphibians, insects, and diverse plant life. It also welcomes over 4 million visitors annually. Beyond the visitor center, people will explore God's incredible handiwork, the ever-changing outdoor landscape of the Grand Canyon, by car, bicycle, aircraft, mule and horse trips, raft trips, and of course by foot, hiking miles of trails organized into four designations: corridor trails, threshold trails, primitive trails, and wild routes. David Iles has hiked the Grand Canyon and written about it in his book, You Can Hike Grand Canyon, for anyone who dreamed of doing this. Get a couple of copies, one for yourself and one to give to someone who wants to pursue, explore, and celebrate this incredible outdoor destination. David and his son Chris made this recording while recounting a Grand Canyon hike they did together along with other friends. Their journey was one of beauty, adventure, bonding, challenges, and spiritual growth.
We hiked down the South Kaibab Trail to the Tonto, then across from the Tonto to the Bright Angel Trail at Havasupai Gardens, and back up to the South Rim. That's a different route than I took the first time. It was still hard. And we learned more about the idea of looking up and looking out. Chris and I are going to talk a little bit about the trip down, and a lot about the trip up. On the way down, I think it was 27 degrees Fahrenheit at the rim, at the South Rim, and it was 70 degrees when we got down to the Tonto platform. What do you remember about that trip, Chris?
Hiking down, it was, I thought it was crazy how dark it was at that time. Starting up at the top of the trail, only being able to see the areas that were lit by our headlamps. That was really interesting. And knowing that I had never been there before and had never seen that trail before. And so I had no clue what to expect. And, you know, with the temperature, what it was, we didn't know when we were going to encounter ice or snow on the trail going down. And so we had spikes that we had strapped onto our hiking shoes, and they came in very handy right away. I think I remember there were plenty of sections of ice where it was on an incline, and so you couldn't just walk gingerly. You were relying on those cleats to dig in and keep you from falling. So again, that mixed with the fact that I had never seen that trail, and so I didn't know where it was going, and we could only see the light from our headlamp. That was an exercise in trust of the people who made the trails, the recommendations for the gear that we needed to bring along, and letting a more experienced hiker lead our group as we descended.
The trail itself was built back in 1922 over the ridges of the Grand Canyon, and so it provides a spectacular view for the sunrise. I can remember coming out onto a flat area partway down the trail, and the sun rose, and it was absolutely beautiful. There was a mule train, as you will recall, coming down the trail at that time, past us, went on down the South Kaibab Trail. That was a time for taking off the ice cleats, putting them in our bag, further down the trail, we took off our stocking caps and coats, and I think we were in t-shirts by the time we got down to to the junction of the Tonto Trail and the South Kaibab. Hard trail nonetheless. Lots of logs, lots of rocks holding the trail in place. So we had to step over each of these. By the time we got down to what's called the tip-off, we were tired. I was tired especially. You guys put some of my stuff in your packs and carried the heavier packs because I needed to have lighter weight on my back in order to make the rest of the hike.
I remember somebody needing to get helicoptered out from the tip-off.
Somebody
who had, I don't know how they didn't get down there before us, did they?
No, it was a student from a university in Texas that was coming up from Phantom Ranch.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
To the tip-off, coming up the South Kaibab.
Yep.
And she had an asthma attack. There was a volunteer at the tip-off that called a helicopter to come in and pick her up. She couldn't go any farther. It's an extreme hiking experience if you haven't trained well enough to hike that kind of distance. You're going down 3,000 feet. You're going down 4.8 miles, I think it is. Then we turned and we went horizontally 4.6 miles to Havasupai Gardens on the Bright Angel Trail. That was some up and down, but it was mostly flat, and we really enjoyed the desert flowers and the animals that we saw along the way.
I remember enjoying it, but also being conscious of time, because we knew that we wanted to be back out before nightfall. And so it wasn't a leisurely stroll through the meadow. You know, we'd stop, appreciate the amazing scenery, but we were also trying to keep pace, and it certainly continued to get hotter and hotter as we went. And so I remember by the time we reached Havasupai Gardens, we were ready for a significant break.
Yes, I think we got there 2 o'clock, rested under the shelter, and it was 3 o'clock when we decided if we didn't hurry up the Bright Angel Trail and get to the top before night, we would have difficulty, and we didn't want to be hiking in the dark.
We were hiking with yourself and another experienced Grand Canyon hiker, and you guys basically knew how long it would take, so working the math, taking off at 3 o'clock was necessary if we were going to make it up to the top before nightfall.
Yes, and that is probably the hardest stretch of any Grand Canyon hike, is the road back up, because you're going from an elevation of around 3,800 feet up to the trailhead at 6,800 feet. So 3,000 feet elevation gain, and a little over 4 miles, trail miles that is, to get up to the top. And it's all uphill. Some very serious switchbacks. One of them, Jacob's Ladder, is at 16% grade. And so it wears you out fast. Hiking out of the Grand Canyon was not terrifying, but foreboding to me. I didn't want to think about it. And when we got on the trail, it reminded me how weak I am, even though I've trained. At 14,000 feet, that's where we live, I wasn't ready for hiking at 3,800 to 6,800 feet. We were experiencing an oxygen loss. The higher we got, the thinner the air got. And so our bodies weren't used to hiking in that thin air, and that caused physical distress. There were five of us hiking back up the Bright Angel Trail.
Yeah, it seemed like the other two had pretty quickly outpaced us walking out of there, and that was actually probably the hardest part of the hike for me, because I was like, we're on flat ground. Why is this so difficult? Like, we're not, there's hardly any grade here. We're just walking on a flat spot, and we just rested up, and now there's this vertical we're going to have to attack. So, like, why am I struggling so hard right here? So I guess it was almost comforting to see that you and Trey were also having a hard time.
Yeah, Trey was having a hard time, I think, with his feet, and I was heaving. My lungs were burning, and then we started up the grade. I remember getting to the top of Jacob's Ladder, walking into the rest house and just laying across the picnic table, because I was so tired.
And that was from the work. It was, I remember that we went into shade at the bottom of Jacob's Ladder, so I was extremely thankful for that. It was the right timing in the day to not have the sun beating directly down on us. But yeah, it was that first physical test on the way up out of the canyon.
We caught up with our friends, and Will had bought a canister of oxygen. He shared it with whoever wanted, but I took a breath and it just didn't help. I mean, it was
I thought it was kind of a gimmicky thing. Apparently it was.
Yeah. I really didn't want to take off from the 3 mile rest house, but I knew that if I didn't, I wasn't going to make it up to the top by nightfall. We got up to the 1.5 mile rest house, and I was done. I mean, I was totally shot. Something happened at the 1.5 mile rest house, though, that we wanted to talk about. We started up the grade toward the top.
The hive? What was that?
Yeah, they call it the bee's hive.
Okay.
The beehive. The switchbacks above the 1.5 mile rest house. You look back at me, you were leading, and you said, "Dad, why don't you lead?" Now, I didn't know why you said that, and I don't know why I agreed, but I took the lead. You and Trey were behind me, and I started to feel better. Some good hikers that I know have told me in the past, when they get up through the upper regions of the Bright Angel Trail, they often stop and look back at how far they've come and how high they are now. And they say it helps them to know what they've accomplished. I did that, and I felt better. Something else happened. I look back at the people that I was leading. You know something? I started thinking more about you than I started thinking about myself. I started thinking, I need to encourage these people behind me, not be discouraged myself. I need to encourage. And that helped me feel better. I just gained both physical and emotional and mental strength from looking out. Chris, you said that you didn't look down so much as looked up. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, well, something I thought was really interesting was that even at Havasupai Gardens, looking up to the rim, it didn't look that far away. Like, I kind of was going, is it really going to take us this long to get up there? I mean, like, it seems like it's just that's just a short hike. It was deceptive for sure. But it certainly gave me hope, you know, being able to see the end of the trail, right? Even though it is a long ways away and it is a lot of work, I can still see where I'm trying to get to. And so that's, certainly, something that was encouraging to me, as we were hiking up the trail. As we continued to hike up, every time I got a glimpse of the rim, yeah, it was closer. And so I was able to see that progress as I kept on moving up.
So you were thinking outside of yourself too. It's just that you were looking up. I was looking back down the trail.
Yeah, and you know, as we were hiking, when I was in the lead, I was certainly trying to set a good pace, trying to keep from going too quickly, but trying to stay out ahead to encourage both you and Trey to move as quickly as you could. you know, so that we could see that progress. Because, you know, probably nothing would be worse than taking a very slow pace and not being able to see much progress and continue to see that you're still almost as far away from the goal at the after a lot of time and feeling discouraged about that.
So let me ask you a question, Chris. Why did you ask me to lead?
Well, as I was leading the three of us, I was constantly looking back and trying to gauge your capability to move at a certain speed and Trey's capability to move at a certain speed, and then trying to figure out how frequently we should stop. Obviously, stopping extremely frequently is not a good thing because then we end up taking extra time, but you know, we certainly wanted to stop enough that it would give us the ability to recover physically for another push on up the trail. And it just felt like at some point, I identified you as the one that needed to lead because I thought you were struggling mentally, not necessarily as much physically. And if I could get you thinking about the things that you think about when you're in the lead, that would take your mind off of any concerns that you had as we were moving up the trail. And so by putting you in the lead, I was hoping to kind of change the way you were thinking about the hike that we were on and change your focus. And, you know, practically speaking, having the slowest in the group at the front means that it's a good pace for everybody because, you know, it's not going to overtax anybody. We're not going to get into a place where we've got an emergency, you know, a medical emergency on our hands because somebody pushed too hard. But it was really about changing things up. I got to follow. I had no problem trying a different spot in the group, awesome. Hanging back.
It worked for me. Whenever I go to the Grand Canyon, I learn something new. We got to the top at 6:30 in the evening. Before sunset, we were able to get together with our friends, Will and Kevin, and talk about the hike. I learned some things, especially on that last mile and a half, that not only apply to hiking, but apply to life as well. And that's the last thing that we want to talk about.
Looking back on it, I realized that the leadership that the first hiker or the lead hiker was taking on allowed them to push past their own discomfort and focus on the others in the group. Treating the hike as a group effort allowed me to get past my own discomfort. Applying that to real life, I tie it directly to my family. You know, the responsibility that that you have for your family demands self-sacrifice for the good of others. And, you know, that's how a family thrives. You can take and apply that to any other group of community that you have. Church is a great example as well. In the church, when we serve selflessly, it's for the good of the community, and it pushes you past a comfort zone and gets you outside of that. So looking outside of yourself has proven to be a great thing in every area of life.
I learned a truth that Paul wrote 2,000 years ago, that when we're in trouble, God comforts us so we can comfort others with that same comfort. Well, Chris, thanks for the conversation. I just encourage everybody listening to look up and outside of yourself in whatever difficulties you may find. Your troubles may be financial, medical, or emotional. They may involve conflict at work, turmoil at home. First, look up to God, who promises you hope. Then look out to the beauty and the needs of the world and people He created. Eventually, you will hike out of those problems.